Maybe the asteroids are the answer. Maybe you'll save the world, one way or the other. In the meantime, we can clean up a tidy little profit doing it. Yep. If we don't make a profit, Dan, we can't do anybody any good. We've got to make money out of this or go out of business. You know that. We can't do this mission at cost. We've got to show a profit. Or at least, Dan countered, a profit potential. Humphreys considered the idea for a moment, then agreed, a profit potential. Okay, I'll settle for that. We need to show the financial community what's left of it. Humphreys actually laughed. Oh, don't worry about the financial community. Men like my father will always be all right, no matter what happens. Even if the whole world drowns, they'll sit on a mountaintop somewhere, fat and happy, and wait for the waters to go down. Dan could barely hide his disgust. Come on, let's get back to work. We've had enough philosophy for one morning.
Humphreys agreed with a smile and a nod. Hours later, after Dan had left the conference room, Humphreys went back to his own office and sank into his high-backed swivel chair. As he leaned back and gazed up at the paneled ceiling, the chair adjusted its contours to accommodate his body. Humphreys relaxed, smiling broadly. He missed it, he said to himself. The numbers are right there in the budget, and Randolph went past them as if they were written in invisible ink. It was so easy to distract Randolph's attention. Just get him started on his idiotic crusade. He blanks out to everything else. He wants to go to the belt to save the world. Sounds like Columbus wanting to reach China by sailing in the wrong direction. Humphreys laughed out loud. It's right there in the budget, and he paid no attention to it at all. Or maybe he thinks it's just a backup, a redundancy measure. After all, it's not a terribly large sum. Once the nanos have built one fusion system, it only costs peanuts to have them build another one. The real expense is in the design and programming, and that's all amortized on the first model. All the backup cost is the raw materials and the time of a few people to monitor the process. The nanos work for nothing. He laughed again. Randolph thinks he's so friggin' smart, sneaking Pancho's sister out of the catacombs. Afraid I'll terminate her? Or does he want to keep Pancho under his thumb? I won't be able to use her anymore, but so what? Who needs her now? I'll be building a second fusion drive and he doesn't even know it.
Spaceport Armstrong.
Pancho stared across the desolate, blast-scarred expanse of the launch center and wrinkled her nose unhappily. It sure looks like a kludge. Standing beside her in the little observation bubble, Dan had to agree. The fusion drive looked like the work of a drunken plumber. Bulbous spheres of diamond that sparkled in the harsh, unfiltered sunlight drenching the lunar surface. The odd shapes of the MHD channel. The pumps that fed the fuel to the reactor chamber. Radiator panels and the multiple rocket nozzles, all connected by a surrealistic maze of pipes and conduits. The entire contraption was mounted on the platform-like deck of an ungainly, spraddle-legged booster that stood squat and silent on the circular launch pad of smooth lunar concrete. The observation chamber was nothing more than a bubble of glass steel on the barren floor of Alphonsus's giant ring wall. Barely big enough for two people to stand in, the chamber was connected by a tunnel to the control center of the launch complex. We didn't build her for beauty, Dan said. Besides, she'll look better once we've mated her with the other modules. Subdued voices crackled from the intercom speaker set into the smoothed wall of the chamber just below the rim of the transparent blister. Pan Asia 019 on final descent, said the pilot of an incoming shuttle. We have you on final, 019, answered the calm, female voice of a flight controller. Pad 4. Pad 4, copy. Dan looked up into the star-flecked sky and saw a fleeting glint of light. Retro rockets, Pancho muttered. On the curve, said the flight controller. Another quick burst. Dan could make out the shuttle now, a dark, angular shape falling slowly out of the sky, slim landing legs extended. Down the pipe, 019, said the woman controller. She sounded almost bored. It all seemed to be happening in slow motion. Dan watched the shuttle come down and settle on the pad farthest away from the one on which the fusion rocket was sitting, waiting for clearance to take off. The shuttle pilot announced, "019 is down. All thrusters off." Poncho let out a puff of pent-up breath. Surprised, Dan asked, "White Knuckles? You?" She grinned, embarrassed. "I always get torqued up, unless I'm driving the buggy." Glancing at his wristwatch, Dan said, "Well, we ought to get clearance to launch as soon as they offload the shuttle." With a nod, Poncho said, "I'd better get suited up." "Right," said Dan. The fusion system itself was the last part of their spacecraft to be launched into orbit around the moon. The propellant tanks and the crew and logistics modules were already circling 100 kilometers overhead. Poncho would supervise the assembly robots that would link all the pieces together. Dan went with her along the tunnel and into the locker room where the astronauts donned their spacesuits. Amanda was already there, ready to help check her out. Dan realized it had been a long time since he'd checked out anyone or donned a spacesuit himself. Spaceflight is so routine nowadays that you can come and go from the Earth to the Moon just like you ride a plane or a bus, he thought. But another voice in his head said, "You're too old to be working in space. Over the years, you've taken as big a radiation dose as you're allowed, and then some." He felt old and pretty useless as he watched Poncho worm into the spacesuit while Amanda hovered beside her, checking the seals and connections. Like Poncho, Amanda was wearing light tan flight overalls. Dan noticed how nicely she filled them out. "Well," he sighed to himself, "at least you're not too old to appreciate a good-looking woman." But he turned and headed for the tunnel that connected the spaceport to Selene proper, feeling useless, wondering if Humphreys was right, and he was butting his head against a stone wall. As he started down the corridor that led to the connector tunnel, he saw Doug Stavanger coming up in the other direction, looking youthful and energetic and purposeful. "Damn it all," he thought. "Stavanger's older than I am, and he looks like a kid. Maybe I ought to get some nanotherapy." "Going to watch the launch?" Stavanger asked brightly. "Think I'll go to the launch center and watch it from there. I like to watch from the observation bubble." "I was just there," Dan said. "Come on, let's see the real thing instead of watching it on a screen." Stavanger's enthusiasm was contagious. Dan found himself striding along the narrow tunnel again out to the bubble. They ducked through the open hatch and into the cramped chamber. Stavanger climbed the 2 steps and looked out, grinning. Dan squeezed in beside him, nearly bumping his head on the curving glass steel. "I used to sneak out here when I was a kid to watch the liftoffs and landings," Stavanger said, grinning. "I still get a kick out of it." Dan made a polite mumble. "I mean, we spend almost our whole lives indoors, underground," Stavanger went on. "It's good to see the outside now and then. As long as the glass doesn't crack. That's what the safety hatches are for." Dan said, "But you've got to get through them fast before they shut themselves." Stavanger laughed. "True enough." They stood shoulder to shoulder in the cramped blister, listening to the flight controllers' crisp voices clicking off the countdown. Stavanger seemed as excited as a kid. Dan envied him. A little tractor rolled noiselessly across the crater floor to the launch pad. Poncho's space-suited figure jumped from it in dreamlike lunar slow motion, stirring up a lazy cloud of gray dust. Then she climbed up the ladder and sealed herself into the booster's one-person crew module. "This is just an assembly mission, isn't it?" Stavanger asked. "Right," said Dan. "She's not a pilot on this flight, just babysitting the robots." Strangely enough, Dan felt his palms going clammy as the countdown neared its final moments. "Relax," he told himself silently. "There's nothing to this." Still, his heart began to thump faster. 3, 2, 1, ignition, said the automated countdown voice. The spacecraft leaped off the launch pad in a cloud of smoke and gritty dust that evaporated almost as soon as it formed. One instant the craft was sitting on the concrete, the next it was gone. "We have liftoff," said one of the human controllers in the time-honored tradition. All systems in the green. Poncho's voice came through the speaker. Copy all systems.